what we're going to do this week is kind of close up, hopefully close up the loop we talked about last week on masks, and then start talking about vaccinations to the more hot and, I mean, that's the hot topics. Those are the two things I've been asked about more in the past 12 months than anything else. So let's have a word of prayer and we'll get started. Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for the time to gather here together, Lord, as we celebrate our freedom, Lord. Thank you for the freedom to be able to discuss these topics openly and without fear of retribution. Please bless this time. We ask all these things in your son's name. Amen. Okay. So, and happy treason day. You know, we're all here because of the great treason against King George. That was too, maybe we'll talk about that even some more. Every 4th of July, it has me scratching my head. That, and then you listen to the Hamilton soundtrack and you're like, boy, what was going on back then? So, all right. So masks. We barely got to a conclusion. And the one thing that I got from everybody last week was, Dean, you didn't tell us what you think. And multiple people come up and tell me that. And usually I try to keep those cards somewhat close to the vest, but I kind of hinted at it, but I will share with you where personally I came to this conclusion. Now remember, this, when we're talking about masks, we're talking about the individual masks mandate that I showed you last week, the internet posting, citing the Boston Globe and the New York Times as their sources, as to why it's justified for the Secretary of the Department of Health to force people to wear masks. So I went through this reasoning. I thought it was a somewhat questionable passing of the mandate. That was one of the points that Bob made. In and of itself, as we're going to talk about, we talk about the vaccine, it would be constitutional in and of itself to force somebody to wear a mask if they maybe go through the proper channels. And we're going to talk about that when we talk about the Supreme Court talking about people being forced to be vaccinated or not. So the underlying issue, I didn't have a problem with the conclusion. I did have a problem necessarily with how we got there and whether or not the process was constitutional. In my mind, I did greatly question the effectiveness of the mandate, and was I actually in the process of saving somebody's life? That was in my equation as well. And then I just had to come to the conclusion that when I sit in church and whenever I talk to my fellow brothers and sisters in Christ, a mask interfered with that. I could not sit in church with a mask on and be fully focused on the worship or on Ray or Rick's preaching. Just couldn't. I think Jackie brought up last week, we got enough distractions keeping our kids down, like a Chuck E. Cheese game, you know, sit. There's all sorts of distractions, and having something interfere with my senses was not one I thought I was willing to make. So because in my conclusion it was interfering with my ability to worship, that's why I chose not to wear a mask when I was here in church. One of the things that was brought up last week, we talked about orderly worship. We don't have time to go through it all, but that comes from 1 Corinthians 14. And I chuckle whenever I read the passage, because 1 Corinthians 14, 26 through 40, it concludes with, let all things be done decently and in order. And prior to that, it told you how to speak in tongues, how to prophesy, and for the women to be silent in the church. So nothing controversial about either of those three topics. Those are the preambles to let everything be done decently in order. But obviously, those are good examples that you could draw from that. And we had an example last week and a question about, whether or not, can a church require you to wear a shirt? And me not wearing a shirt would be a distraction, A, to myself and to other people. So that would affect the orderliness of worship. Me wearing a mask affects me worshiping and not worshiping. So that's why I think that might be a little bit different. And to the other point, I think some folks have made, well, it's, yes, you still get to go to church, but you still shouldn't violate any government regulation on your way out there. One example I thought of, and I'd be curious to hear what people say, What if you were getting ready to go to church that morning? You have one car, and you walk out there, and you realize that it's the first day of the month, and as the first day of the month, your car is no longer validly inspected. It's technically illegal to drive that car. If a cop sees you, he's going to give you a fine, a ticket. Would you still get in that car and drive to church? Or would you say, well, I'm going to break the law by driving this car? Because the reason I extrapolated that is because what's the reason for safety inspections? It's not just doesn't protect you. It protects the people on the other side of the road, right? So your tires aren't too bald and your brakes still work. So it's not like a seatbelt. I never really got the seatbelt analogy because the seatbelt protects just you and only you. The mask analogy always protects not more me than thee or vice versa or whatever side you were on. So seatbelts didn't really work. But car inspections, I've talked about speeding a lot. So would you get into a car that's not inspected to drive to church? I'm sure we've all done it. Bob, would you get in a car that's not inspected to drive to church? Yes. Right, you're willing to be potentially fined. But there are others would say, well, but your tires could be bald, your brakes could be thin, your rotors could be rusted. You are putting people at risk to worship the Lord. But then individually, you're going to have to go through that same calculation that I did. I kind of putting people at risk. What's the actual possibility of me putting at risk versus me going to worship with my fellow believers? Okay, so I gave some homework. Does anybody else have anything before we close loop on mask? I asked, did anybody else have a biblical reason for not obeying that internet mask mandate? Did anybody have anything else, any other thoughts or conclusions? I saw differing people come on different sides, and I think everyone was pretty respectful of it. But Rosemary?
I don't know that I would take this to the last, to the mask. I mean,
but
in the Bible, it says a lot about keeping myself open before
God. I'm sorry, open?
Open.
Open, okay.
Open.
Right, and Rosemary made a point there of what I had you kind of talked about last week, all the verses from last week's outline, where, you know, our face holds the image of God, our face shows our emotions, our face shows our wisdom, our face shows our foolishness, our face reflects a lot of things in that regard. Again, that was one of the calculations I made as well. Okay, so before we talk about finish covering our face, and now we're going to go talk about putting stuff inside our body, okay? We might loop back to some of these same principles here whenever we start talking about vaccinations. And this is the number one comment I get every week from folks here, from folks out on the street. So I kind of want to take this a little bit piece by piece. First of all, I want to talk about can the state, the government, force you to be vaccinated? And then I want to talk about, well, is there, after we talk about can the state do it, can various entities do it, including your employer, is there then a biblical reason to not do it, to not comply? Okay, so the question of whether or not the state can force you to vaccinate, and I put point A there, just by being alive. No other qualifications. I'm not going to go to work. I'm not going to travel overseas. I'm not going to do anything but breathe. Okay? Can the state force you to vaccinate? So, believe it or not, and I was shocked whenever I found this out, that this controlling law is still from a 1905 Supreme Court case. And I referenced this, and it was referenced in the cases where I talked about church openings. And it's still good law, but we've never really necessarily had to see it apply before. And we're still not sure whether or not we're going to need to see it apply or not, based on what governments decide to do in the coming weeks and months about forcing vaccinations just by being alive. So I'm going to walk through this because it's very, I would print it out, but it's 30 pages long and we wouldn't have time to read it all. So I gave you some of the highlights there that we're going to walk through and kind of review some stuff even we talked about 2 years ago and talk about the specifics of the case. Okay, so one of the first points that this is Jacobson versus Massachusetts, and there was a law in place in Massachusetts that allowed local municipalities to pass, you know, there's many federalism within states. The state government allowed local municipalities to pass laws mandating vaccinations, and the city of Cambridge did that. And if you didn't have a medical excuse, or, and the medical excuse was only for children, by the way. Children have a medical excuse. If you didn't, then you were fined $100, which in today's bucks is probably closer to $1,000. There is, we'll talk about this a little bit, there is no really precedent for forcibly vaccinating somebody, putting them down on a gurney and injecting them with something. There's a whole lot of other constitutional issues and 13th Amendment issues with that. But they would still punish you financially if you didn't get vaccinated. Okay. So one of the initial things that Jacobs had talked about when they were leading up to their conclusion was, they said, the liberty secured by the Constitution of the United States to every person within its jurisdiction does not import an absolute right in each person to be at all times and in all circumstances wholly freed from restraint. So there's globally there. I think everyone would agree with that, right? Let's start out. Everyone can agree. You're not allowed to murder, right? You're not allowed to speed. You're not allowed to let your grass grow too high. Okay, there's obviously extremes, and we're going to start getting a little closer and closer to things that start to get a little bit more personal. And like you think, why can't I let my grass grow too high? You do, you're going to get fined eventually. It's just going to happen unless you're in a zoned rural land. If you're in any kind of residential, you're going to get fined. So the state always, you're not absolutely free all the time. That's a misnomer the Supreme Court points out there. There are manifold restraints to which every person is necessary subject for the common, that should say good there, that just got caught up. So for the common good of the people, the government can restrain your behavior. And here is a somewhat argumentative point they make, but you know, you can see the conclusion they're leading to. Real liberty for all could not exist under the operation of a principle which recognizes the right of each individual person to use his own, whether in his respects of his person or his property, regardless of the injury that may be done to others. Okay. Now, does everybody disagree with that? That your right, you know, that sometimes they say that your rights end at the, you know, tip of my nose. You do whatever you want with your hands until your hand's about to hit my nose. And then that's a problem. Brandon. So Brandon talked about, yeah, the injury factor. Like I talked about, obviously nose to the face is going to be an injury. And is, you know, going back to the, is not wearing a mask causing an injury? Is not getting vaccinated potentially subjecting somebody else in the common people and the common good, is it potentially causing them injury? So this is the equation that they're walking through here. The possession and enjoyment of all rights are subject to reasonable conditions as may be deemed by the governing authority of the country essential to the safety, health, peace, good order, and morals of the community. Even liberty itself, the greatest right of all, greatest of all rights, is not unrestricted license to act according to one's own will. It is only freedom from restraint under conditions essential to the equal employment of the same rights by others. It is then liberty regulated by law. So he's kind of looping back there, the courts there. And again, this is the Supreme Court of the United States. It's still good law, so this is actual precedent right here, saying that, okay, now we're going to bring in health, safety, peace, good order, morals of the community. You saw that a lot in 1905, morals of the community. Whenever communities regulated, you know, nightlife, I'm not talking like adult nightlife, I'm talking about like bars, you know, blue laws on Sundays. You know, you think about if you're blue laws, what gave the state the authority to shut down businesses on Sunday? Good morals. Back in 1905, that was pretty popular. So you could have a business, you could say it's profitable, but well, why are you shutting me down on Sunday? I could make a killing selling ice cream on Sunday or selling apple pies on Sunday, but they shut you down for the morals of the community, because back then they thought it was good morals to rest on the first day. All right, so now we're going to get even more specific. If a statute purporting to have been enacted to protect the public health, the public morals, or the public safety has no real or substantial relation to those objects, or it is, beyond all question, a plain, palpable invasion of rights secured by the fundamental law, it is the duty of the courts to so adjudge and therefore give effect to the Constitution. So they're saying if it does invade rights protected by the Constitution, then it's their duty to stop that law from coming into effect. All right. Give you a little bit more background on the law here before we start getting into their conclusions. This is what, and you're going to kind of chuckle because some of this stuff sounds familiar. This is from 1902. Okay, it usually takes a while for things to get to the Supreme Court. This is from the statute passed by Cambridge, Massachusetts. Whereas smallpox has been prevalent to some extent in the city of Cambridge and still continues to increase, and whereas it is necessary for the speedy extermination of the disease that all persons not protected by vaccination should be vaccinated, and whereas in the opinion of the board, the public health and safety require the vaccination or revaccination of all inhabitants of Cambridge, be it ordered that all inhabitants of the city who have not been successfully vaccinated since March 1st, 1897, be vaccinated or revaccinated. A little tiny township board in Cambridge, Massachusetts, issued this order. Now, you'll be shocked to know, this is from the summary, in 1905, 11 states, including Pennsylvania, 1905, and there's nobody here that would even remotely have been alive then, mandated vaccines. But nobody knew that. 11 states. And there's a long history in this. They go through, like, pretty much, it's a pretty detailed opinion, every pretty much state or empire, in this case, in Western Europe, England, Holland, debates in the British Parliament about mandatory vaccines. So the idea of a mandatory vaccine is not something new. This just happened to be the first one to make it to the Supreme Court of the United States. And with 11 states saying yes and the other states saying no, then that's something the Supreme Court just has to eventually take up. So here is what the plaintiff, the individual who did not want to be vaccinated's position was. Plaintiff offered to show that he had suffered seriously from previous vaccination, thus indicating that his system was sensitive to the poison of vaccination virus. This is his position. I didn't put that word in there. That's in here. The like illness of his son indicated that a hereditary condition exists that would cause the system to rebel against the introduction of the vaccine matter. If the plaintiff had offered the opinion of a physician that vaccine might have been deadly in his effects upon him, the law recognized no such defense, and the evidence must have been excluded. That's just a point of law there. The law itself testifies to its own oppressive and unreasonable character. It is not due process of law when such defense is excluded. That's getting into too much legalese. So the point I wanted to make there is this plaintiff that said, I don't want to be vaccinated, and I don't want to pay the $100 fine, is saying that this is a poison in my system. I do not want to be vaccinated. And there was no exclusion for adults. The only exclusion, I'll read it here. An exception is made in favor of children who present a certificate signed by a registered physician that they are unfit subjects for vaccination. That was the only exception. So adults, didn't matter what a physician said. Hence, this guy's making his case, making it to the Supreme Court. So we'll go down to the third from the bottom point there. We start getting into the court's conclusion. The personal liberty secured by the 14th Amendment against state deprivation is not infringed by and that's the chapter, and that's the state law which gives the local governments permission, authorizing compulsory vaccination by local boards of health when deemed necessary for public health or safety, under which, as construed by the highest state court, vaccination may be required of all inhabitants of a city where smallpox is prevailing and increasing. I was wondering how they found out smallpox was prevailing and increasing without CNN or Twitter. It did always fascinate me how pandemics, and this was more of a, smallpox is more of an epidemic, functioned in 100 years ago, whenever there was instant spread of information. Okay, now brace yourself. If you don't like vaccines, you're not going to like this next point here. Judicial notice will be taken that vaccination is commonly believed to be a safe and valuable means of preventing the spread of smallpox, and that this belief is supported by high medical authority. I mean, you could just grab smallpox and insert coronavirus there, right? And that was a headline that we've heard for the last, how long, where are we, July? 9 months we've heard. A state legislature, in enacting a statute purporting to be for the protection of local communities against the spread of smallpox, is entitled to choose between the theory, two theories, of the medical profession who thinks vaccination worthless for this purpose, and believe its effect to be injurious and dangerous, and the opposite theory, which is in accord with a common belief, is maintained by high medical authority and is not compelled to commit a matter of this character involving the public health and safety to the final decision of a court or jury. So there you just said there, a judge doesn't have to send it to a jury. He can weigh medical experts here, medical experts there. That's in a presidential Supreme Court case. Just so you know, we've been doing this battle of the experts for the past 14 months, 15 months. And the Supreme Court of the United States says the state court, or whoever gets to decide it first, can weigh the experts. That's really the first test that we've only seen in the local levels. We've had a lot of local challenges from restaurants to mask mandates and stuff. Because restaurants were really the only entity that had it enforced on them by way of the public health. All the opinions of the judges say, well, I'm not going to go against the majority opinion of medical experts. I don't want to be that guy. And the Supreme Court opinion here called it, they acknowledge the medical profession that thinks the vaccine is worthless, but they also say that those that think it is good is with the common belief. So they've kind of subsumed the argument that, well, it's common that it's safe. It's uncommon that it's not safe. So we're going to stay with the common belief. An adult cannot claim to have been deprived of the liberty of the 14th Amendment by enforcement against him of a compulsory vaccine law, at least, where he does not show with reasonable certainty that he is not at a time fit subject for vaccination, or that vaccination by reason of his then condition will seriously impair his health or possibly cause his death. So they left the door open there that if you could get a doctor to say that the vaccine is going to cause serious injury or death, that's something we'll talk about here when we go back and review Roe versus Wade. Serious injury or death, usually you can get a doctor to say that anytime, that something's going to cause serious injury or death, including pregnancy. But nowadays, you might be a little hard-pressed to find a doctor to say that. Carl. Yep. Well, yeah, the court has to defer to that. I apologize if that was unclear. It's going to get to the court. But the problem that we had in Pennsylvania, and I didn't distinguish that, is that we didn't really have a legislature opinion. And that's the problem with the emergency orders. We didn't really know. They're considering it right now. See, legislation usually takes time. So that's why we've seen pretty much the last couple of months that will there be vaccine passports or required vaccinations? Because even the state health people aren't really confident enough they could force a vaccine via the internet, you know, just saying, I say so. Even they kind of realize that that's something that we're going to have to get the legislature to decide on. But yes, they would. They would, but if it came out before, if it came out by government mandate, by a governor just saying that, then a court would have to go through the same equation, weighing which expert. And that's what they actually did this past year when they were forced to decide on whether or not masks were required or not. Thank you for pointing that out. So, the Supreme Court of the United States concluded that yes, you can be subject to mandatory vaccination in the United States, and it does not violate the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. Does that surprise anybody? Anybody surprised by that? I see some heads nodding. That's the way it's been for over a century. We just never really knew it, because the last time this was really tried was over 100 years ago. Brandon. It has not, to the befuddlement of many. I did my research on this, and everyone scratched their head. It's the last time it really came up, because, I mean, the last really kind of pandemic epidemic was the Spanish flu, which I'm not a scientist, although I claim to be one on Facebook. I'm not a scientist. The vaccine for the flu was a little bit different. I actually think maybe the Spanish flu was a little more COVID-related, but smallpox had been around for a little bit, and the vaccine was there, available, whether or not you thought it was poison or not. It was there, but this never really happened before in the United States. Now, if a state did try to do vaccine passports, and it would eventually make its way up. Now, the interesting part is, there seems to be, and this is the benefit of being in the age of Twitter and the age of modern technology, is I don't know if 11 states would have been able to get away with passing mandatory vaccine passports, mandatory vaccines in the 1800s, 1900s, if everybody knew it was happening. I mean, I guarantee you, 90% of the state of Pennsylvania in 1905 had no idea what the legislature was doing. None. They were out on their farms or, you know, working in the coal mines and just living their life, and they didn't know what the law was, nor did they care, as long as it didn't interfere with their ability to make their living and raise their family. So it's a little bit more open process now. So you'd be shocked to see if, and these, you know, I didn't have time to do the research, and they've been hinting at it, is whether or not those had to do with smallpox, whether the states might still have something tucked under the hidden laws and say, well, you know, I think this might give me the power to, because we did it with smallpox, I think it's still kind of good law, so I'm going to force people to get the coronavirus vaccine. Some modern examples. A lot of people didn't know this. I didn't know that. In April of 2019, New York City had an outbreak of the measles. And it ordered within 48 hours anyone more than 6 months old who lived, worked, or attended school within four Brooklyn zip codes, unless immune or medically exempt, shall be vaccinated against measles. The city first threatened civil and criminal repercussions, but eventually settled on a $1,000 fine. This actually happened 2 years ago in New York City. If you weren't vaccinated from the measles, this was an outbreak in Brooklyn, which I don't even remember hearing about. But the New York City Health Bureau said, if you're not vaccinated from measles, $1,000 fine. Right. Yeah, and it was centered on, I mean, it was centered on a couple schools in the Brooklyn area with a diverse demographic of folks that just weren't vaccinated. And they saw an outbreak, and so New York City said, you're going to have to go get the needle in you're getting a $1,000 fine. 6 months. This does exist. Okay, the government has always had the power to say, you're getting something injected into your body. Go ahead, Carl. Yep. Right. So this was just by being alive. Just you could stay in your house in theory and be in violation of the law. So That's what the law was, and I know it's kind of hard to digest because we don't really like to think about it, but the government does retain that power. So let's try to break it down. Oh, first of all, I have to talk about this. It's point C under just by being alive. The number one argument that I've heard multiple times about the vaccination is, what about this emergency use authorization? Okay, so I actually put the law in there because under, yes, that's under section 21, subsection 30OBBB3E1A23, and that's the actual citation, where it says each individual must be informed of the option to accept or refuse administration of the product, of the consequences, if any, of refusing administration of the product or the alternatives to the product that are available, of their benefits or their risks. Okay. So the reason I'm just telling you this has been somewhat ignored is, A, this only really applies to the government. We'll talk about employers here. This only applies to the government. Okay. And B, you're probably less than a month away from this going away and all the vaccines getting full approval. So yes, you could say right now this emergency use would probably contradict with Jacobson, which is you be vaccinated just by being alive. But I think the vaccine passport folks know that by the time that they actually make this law, if they try to, that this is going to go away, the emergency use authorization. I know Pfizer and Moderna already have their paperwork in for it. So it's only going to be a matter of time. All right. Well, yeah, Art asked, and that goes back to what we talked about in Jacobson, the authority of the executive versus the legislative branch, emergency powers versus normal legislation. And I do think that the executive branches, even the ones even in California, Nevada, Pennsylvania, have had to weigh this. So I think Pennsylvania, for all their craziness, and I'm not crazy about the attorney general, but I do think he did a good job advising the governor this year on what he can constitutionally do and not do. Probably said, if you try to use your executive power to mandate vaccines, you're going to have a problem with Jacobson. You're going to have a problem because it's really not necessarily, you know, there's an argument of how devastating the virus was or wasn't. You know, was it like a movie you saw or wasn't like a movie you saw? What was real and what wasn't real? But yeah, if the governor has broad powers, and that was legislated in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, unfortunately, what we talked about a couple weeks ago, the legislator gave the governor executive emergency powers, and then the legislator wanted it back. They tried to get the Supreme Court to give it back, but they weren't going to do that because the Supreme Court's controlled by Democrats. But that's what we voted on 2 months ago in May, was to remove the governor's ability to have more than 30 days of executive power. So to Art's point, right now, when you all voted, we gave the governor 30 days pretty much to do what he wants. And then after that, the legislature comes in. The first court, this first came up, if you recall, in June, I think, in Wisconsin, was the first state, because every state's law is differently. The Wisconsin Supreme Court said, wait a minute, governor, you have to give the power back to the legislature eventually under Wisconsin law. The problem with Pennsylvania is Pennsylvania law didn't say that. It was very poorly written. So that's why we tried to do that amendment. So usually you're going to give an executive broad authority for a limited amount of time. In Pennsylvania, currently it's 30 days. Hopefully he decides to follow it if things flare up again in the fall. So yeah, times of war, times of real emergency. And we all remember what it was like the first couple weeks of March when we didn't know whether the sky was actually falling or not. Which is one of the reasons this emergency use authorization. I mean, essentially what that is cutting through the red tape. I'm going to be honest with you, and we'll talk about whether the vaccine can be dangerous or not and whether it's biblical or not. Denny. Right, and Daddy's point was we want all the government branches to be included because it becomes more of a voice. But I can tell you it was difficult during the early days of the pandemic. I got sent a lot of emails with Senator Fontana, who's our representative in Carnegie for our business too, and he's a Democrat. He would tell me they're not listening. Talk to Jason Ortete, my local rep. He's like, Dean, they won't listen to me. I talked to him. I argued with him about mask mandates for children playing soccer. He's like, I've written her a letter. She won't respond to me. And this was the new health secretary. So to the point being, though, the legislature tried to get involved in Pennsylvania. And again, I'm talking constitutionally. Pennsylvania had good advice. I think making children wear masks while they play outside is ridiculous. But constitutionally, technically, you could do it. So what Pennsylvania kind of did was constitutional according to the United States and Pennsylvania government, because like I said first week, they didn't say a thing about churches. They said something about you walking into a church that you had to have a mask on, but they said absolutely nothing restricting churches from gathering. We talked about children in school. Point E, obviously, if you join the military, they can require you to be vaccinated, right? You could be drafted into the military. I imagine the guys that got drafted and went to Vietnam had to be injected with a whole bunch of stuff before they went over there to that pressure cooker. They didn't have a choice. For travel, again, we're not talking about just being alive. Obviously, you have to be vaccinated, some to get into the country and some to return to the country. One of my good friends who's an undertaker, and he travels to Africa a lot training people, because they don't really have a good science over there to be undertakers. He's been injected with everything on the planet, he tells me, because he's been to like every country in Africa helping people bury people. He's seen everything. He's got injected, and he's like, it just is what it is. It's his choice. It's his profession. That's what he does. All right. G, I didn't put anything under this. Can your employer force you to get a vaccine? Yes. Yes, and the answer again is yes. Okay, I've had it asked several ways. The EEOC confirmed this about a month ago, and most employment lawyers knew this, you know, ahead of time. I dealt with this week, a client wants his employee to go to Mexico and come back. You have to get vaccinated. He refused it. We said, bye. Just is what it is. So here's the exceptions. There's two exceptions. One, disability, the Americans with Disabilities Act. Okay, so you have to prove that you have some sort of medical condition, and you're going to have a doctor say that I can't be vaccinated because of that medical condition. Okay. Now then your employer has to determine, they could still fire you, if whether or not there's some sort of reasonable accommodation where they can put you in another position that doesn't require vaccination. Sometimes the employer necessarily isn't required. I have another client, they move furniture in and out of businesses, right? And most of their building owners are making the men that come in be vaccinated. Okay, so my client's like, Dean, I'm not making them be vaccinated, but if they're not vaccinated, I don't have anywhere for them to go. I was like, well, then it's their choice. If you have to be vaccinated or I don't have work for you, there's no accommodation I can give you. You're manual labor. I don't have an office position for you. So essentially there, your employer is forcing you to be vaccinated or you're unemployed. The next one, big one, is religious. Okay, and that's where we're going to kind of bleed into here in our last 15 minutes of whether or not we think maybe there's a biblical reason to not be vaccinated. So Title VII of the Civil Rights Act protects religious sincerely held religious beliefs. So if you have a sincerely held religious belief that you should not be vaccinated, your employer cannot force you to be vaccinated. But guess what? If there's no job available for an unvaccinated person, they no longer have to employ you. They have to do the same thing, like, okay, well, where do we put an unvaccinated person? There's no place to put an unvaccinated person. Or they say, well, you have to continue to wear a mask, or you have to continue to socially distance. They could do that. But you actually have an, you can't be made up. Now, the government's pretty, they're not going to get into questioning what sincerely held religious beliefs are. If you've been against vaccinations because of your religion for a while, that's, they would look at that. But you, if you're suddenly saying, well, I'm like Jehovah's Witnesses, I only can't have transfusions, and you convert suddenly so you don't have to get the vaccine, courts will examine the sudden conversions. Brandon. No. You can, and it's, the court says you can believe in the, be a member of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. You know, the old atheist straw man argument. You can believe in that as long as, and have your own beliefs. You can, but as long as they're actually, they're real. You haven't made them up for the purposes of getting out of some sort of obligation. Courts are not going to get into questioning the veracity of religious beliefs. You can believe that there's aliens. You can believe anything you want, but it has to be sincere to you. Tim. Exactly. And that goes to Tim's point was, if you've been vaccinated for everything else and then suddenly you say religion doesn't say I can't be vaccinated from COVID, you have to have a pretty good reason for it or identify some sort of religious shift. Like, you know, your employer, you might be a Protestant and you're like, yeah, I go to church on Sunday, can't work on Sunday. And then suddenly on Saturday, there's a big football game. I'm going to convert to Seventh-day Adventism. And, you know, that Saturday is their holy day. That's a shift. Like, well, wait a minute. You've been practicing Sundays as your day of religious observance, and we will not schedule you to work Sundays. But just because something important happens on Saturday, you can't suddenly shift to a different religion that recognizes Saturday as their holy day. Jackie. So her point was about the short time period and whether or not it's dangerous. Is the vaccine dangerous or not? So that would go to, and I kind of pointed this out in my points here. Some of the points that I came up from doing my research about, is there a biblical reason not to be vaccinated? Is the government sinning as a minister of God? Is the government forcing us to sin? Is the government forcing you to risk your family's safety? And from whence cometh the vaccine? We'll talk about that. I'm surprised nobody's put their hand up yet on that one. But let's talk about this, the safety issue first. And now, okay, I'm going to leave here and give you my personal opinion here. Okay. I trust billionaires. Okay. Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson. Okay. Even if there's talk it's out there, the government is going to protect them from any liability. They care about one thing and one thing only. Money. The shareholders, the board of directors, the CEOs. I highly doubt that they're going to put something out there that is going to cause hundreds of thousands of deaths. Cause more damage than your cholesterol medication, which you're watching your football game and then you get like 20 minutes of may cause da 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 da. Anytime you put something in your body, you're going to get the thin line, you know, somebody talking really fast. Any abnormal issues. So I say it all the time, and that's why, you know, whenever I know there was some concern about the speed, and I'm talking more as a lawyer here, but, you know, when former President Trump said Operation Warp Speed, all he did was get rid of all the red tape. He didn't tell the scientists to stop being scientists. And these guys that work at Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson don't work at the government for a reason. Because these are the guys that were at the top of their classes, these IP lawyers, doctors. They're being paid hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, because they're smart in what they do. Robin. So Robin's point was kind of like an assumption of the risk. I'm going to take a medicine for my high blood pressure because I have high blood pressure, and the risk of lowering, the benefit of lowering my blood pressure is higher than the risk of the line item stuff that could make a problem for you. So the point there was a scientific one, a distinction there, arguing the difference between whether or not it's actually a vaccine as defined by history and science and whether or not it's something like a flu shot. And I honestly don't know what the flu shot is per se. I understand that it's a concoction of what scientists think the strain of flu is going to be for the year. So I don't know. I guess they call it a shot, which I occasionally get based on a whim or not. It just isn't. I don't mind telling you, it's full disclosure. I got the vaccine, and I got it pretty much as early as I could. There were rumors circulating. Well, they were highly encouraging the legal profession to get it. And I was in a courtroom just 3 weeks ago with five or six lawyers, and the judge walked in, and, "Are you vaccinated? Are you vaccinated?" Now, if I had said no, I can't lie to a judge. If I'd said no, she would have made everybody put their mask on, and she would have been unhappy about it too. So I knew that was coming. So for my professional reasons, if you give me full access to government buildings and full access to the courthouse without having to wear a mask, I did it. And I also take some night classes at Pitt too. That was the other equation. Although shockingly, Pitt's not requiring it. But apparently, if you don't have the vaccine and you're a student at Pitt, you have to walk around like with a rubber suit on. So they're going to call you out. So to me, I made that. I didn't think in my equation that there was any problem. So I guess my point there is, does anybody think there's anything is there any biblical reason for not getting the vaccine? Brent. So Brandon, he anticipated the point I made, which I thought was going to be a little bit more louder. D, from whence cometh the vaccine? I heard a lot about that, and that is from aborted fetal cells. And I was shocked when I did my research on this at how long this has been going on. Now, first of all, there is widely unanimous agreement that there are no actual aborted fetal cells in either of the three vaccines. The fetal cell lines were used at various stages of the development of all three vaccines in different aspects, but none of them actually have fetal cells in them. I was shocked that some prescription medications, Enbrel, pull manolazine. There's a few others actually contain fetal cells. So I don't know if anyone's actually done that research on what you take. I never question the prescriptions I take. I just kind of take them. Yes. So remember, first week we talked about spheres of authority, and the point there was protection of the family. So if you know, we've had the family sphere, we've got the government sphere and the church sphere, and we talked about how this 2020's caused the three to collide. And the point there was, if in my family sphere I believe it to be unsafe, then that is the biblical role of the family, then you do not, you shouldn't get it, because it would otherwise violate your conscience. The point is made about kids. I think kids are obviously a little different issue based on a risk factors and the need. But I don't think that even 100 years ago they tried to exclude children. And hopefully that'll kind of resolve itself. But I will say, this isn't embarrassing or anything. My daughter was at her physical, entering sixth grade. So she had to have a couple shots, typical things that we probably all had before we went in sixth grade. And her doctor says, well, hopefully by next time you come, we'll have a COVID vaccine for you. And even my daughter went, so good for her. But yeah, and I was like, well, I'll look at it a year from now, you know. But right now, obviously, even her doctor, Phoebe's 11, wasn't going to do it. But still, she had this form. She goes to Eden Christian that had to have all these check marks. I said she had to have two shots. I think they were boosters from probably what she got when she was six or even a baby. But to keep going to the school, and this is not just because it's a private school, public school, you have to have these shots in Pennsylvania. So I then as a father had to make that determination whether or not those shots were safe. And to a lot of points here, those shots have been around for decades. So, and I'm sure there's still risk with the measles shot and the smallpox shot and the polio shot and all this stuff that you get. Lauren. We got time, one more. A vaccine, what?
Injury,
okay. And Lauren's point was, if you know somebody that's suffered some sort of adverse consequence from a vaccine, you might be more hesitant. And that all goes into the equation. You should not, fathers, mothers, you have to make this decision for yourself and your family, whether or not it violates your conscience. You know, just like you have to decide if you're going to drive the family minivan 80 and a 55. I'm just saying, that's probably unsafe, and you've all probably done it. So that's the equation. For every decision you make as the head of your household, you have to decide, as the biblical head of the household, whether, depending on the situation, mother, father, safety-wise, am I going to do this, and does this violate my conscience? All right, we're already out of time. This is a very, very good talk. I'll be around if you have any questions. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for the good discussion, Lord, and thank you for the ability to have this discussion. Please bless our time of worship this morning. We ask all these things in your Son, Jesus' name. Amen.